Open Your Eyes, Look Up to the Skies and See, by Darth Stitch, read by Silvercat 1620. Summary. It's a tough job, but this raven's got to do it. Matthew has feelings about his boss. Not like that, you goddamn pervs. He has feelings for his boss the same way that chick in the Brooklyn 99 meme had about the puppy. Like, I've only had Dream of the Endless as my boss for about 2 minutes, but if any of you motherfuckers hurt him, I have a very particular set of skills that will make me a nightmare for people like you. Yeah, he's mashing up his references, but Matthew doesn't care. His Nibbly Darkless, the Lord of Dreams and Nightmares, has had a shit time this past century, no thanks to his bastard bitch of a sibling, and seriously, Matthew thinks it's 17,000 kinds of fucked up that their idea of teaching their brother a lesson involves imprisonment, innocence caught up in the crossfire, and potential murder. So yeah, Matthew is perfectly willing to throw down for his boss if he has to. Except that his boss still has nightmares about poor Jessamy, and it's manifesting itself in being oddly protective over Matthew in the absolute worst way. Like, he's the raven for Dream of the Endless now. He's got a job to do, and maybe sometimes that has an element of risk to it, but those are the breaks, right? Dream can't keep Matthew from attending to his duties, and he's gonna do them, come hell or high water. And the perks are, like, super amazing, because flying, woo to the who! There's some magic stuff and some secret raven tricks that Lucienne has been teaching him too, because she used to be Dream's raven as well. He's also got nesting privileges now, because it's nice to get some shut-eye in the boss's coat. It's hilarious, because Dream will be all exasperated and say, "Matthew," in that long-suffering tone, but he accompanies that with a gentle stroke along Matthew's feathers, and there's a tiny sweet smile playing about his lips. Dream reserves those smiles just for a very select few, which currently includes the boyfriend that Matthew thoroughly approves of. Matthew's proud to be one of them, of getting to see Dream smile, not the boyfriend thing. You know what? Matthew's gonna stop while he's ahead. There. Matthew remembers the first time he got a proper hug from the boss, which had scared several years off of his life. And that was mostly because he felt real tears soak through his feathers. "Hey, boss. You okay?" A soft, hitching sigh.
"No, Matthew. Things are not okay."
It was kind of awkward to manage a there with a wing, but Matthew made it work somehow.
"Okay, just so you know, if somebody's ass needs to get kicked, you know I'm your guy, right? I mean, Raven, but yeah, you get what I'm saying? I will go mano a mano with whoever or whatever it is that's giving you grief. Oh, shit. Is it your asshole sibling again?"
"Matthew. Matthew." Dream gave a watery, short laugh. "The sentiment is appreciated, but unnecessary. Thank you."
Matthew was a little proud that he did manage to coax his sad, wet cat of a boss out of whatever melancholic funk that Dream had found himself in, but yeah, that made Matthew nervous, because he knows all the signs of depression when he sees them, and this is not a task one single raven can undertake alone. Well, Lucienne actually said that first, but when she first recruited Matthew, he's taken them to heart. Mervyn was another one they'd nabbed, because while Mervyn might have a mouth on him and tact wasn't exactly a word in his dictionary, Merv was still good people in the end. The next was Abel, with Goldie peeping along. Then, thank the creator, they'd finally managed to grab Hab Gadling, who was a goddamn gift to them all, even if they had to put up with the occasional flower showers or the inadvertent appearance of blooms in every nook and cranny of the castle. Merv, of course, complained the loudest about this, especially about the smell of roses, lavender, and poppies getting in everywhere, but he did hum a couple of love songs while sweeping away the blooms. It was also Merv who said, with authority,
"You know what? I think old Hobbsy's good for the boss. This one's gonna last, I'm telling ya."
It was Merv who had clued Matthew in on the boss's absolute fucking disaster of a love life, and also added to Matthew's mental list of things I will absolutely kick Desire's ass for, just give me half a chance. There was this one time where they were all in the Dreaming's version of the new inn, where Lucienne had finally gotten drunk enough to reveal one very important secret about the boss.
There was a lot of swearing, and Matthew had to appreciate Hobgadling for the colorful Middle English swear words, which kind of had a weird harmony with Mervyn's cussing. But basically, it all amounted to a collective nope from everyone in this conspiracy. This wasn't going to happen. Not to their Morpheus. Not on their watch. "Dreams don't fucking die," Matthew had once said to his boss, down deep in the bowels of literal hell, with the Morning Star herself about to move in for the kill. "Dreams don't fucking die because they are hope given form. The same thing that makes Hobgadling look death herself in the eye, smile charmingly, and tell her that he was still looking forward to living. Especially now, when he's got his ridiculous husband to have and to hold, to love and to cherish, from this day forward forever." See, death just couldn't give Hob the obligatory shovel talk after that. Matthew had to take care of it. If only to keep the tradition, yeah? Well, anyway, Matthew's gonna make good and goddamn sure that Dream of the Endless will stay alive. He'll always have his raven to guard his back for him. The end. Footnote the first. Matthew still hasn't gotten over the fact that Dream of the Endless has a laugh, like... Well, if one had only ever imagined a black hole in space to laugh, which was somewhere between hilarious and horrifying. Maybe hilarifying was the right word. Now, why did Dream laugh? Look, you do not expect to start singing Bohemian Rhapsody and not get an entire chorus going, which is what happened when Merv started in on it, then snagged Snotter, then Flauntleroy and the Dreamlings, then Nuala, Lucienne, and finally Matthew. They were answering each other with Galileos and were startled when Dream joined in on the last few verses. Man, the boss really had a voice on him. Footnote the second. The Hellfire Club and most of Hobbs' students weren't sure why they suddenly had Bohemian Rhapsody as their LSS, but really, nobody minded. There were a lot of impromptu singing in the hallways because of that, and even their favorite history professors, Gadling and Pearson, joined in. Footnote the third. Matthew looked in on a certain little girl, and he'd really just meant to... Well, he wasn't sure what he'd meant to do, except he just wanted to know. The two of them had a very important conversation about their Lord Morpheus, and a mutual understanding was reached, and a friendship was formed. Lord Morpheus's ravens had to stick together, right? Matthew also made friends with said little girl's dog, who was named Gregory. The end.